like this, it narrows in that voice. It narrows the voice in, it puts an edge on it here and an edge on it there, and it focuses the voice like a laser beam. Think of all week the phrase Radio Baghdad in your mind. Think of the singers of Tibet, the singers, the Bulgarian women's choir, the singing of the outer islands of Scotland, Cajun singers, real Eastern Kentucky singing. It's a focusing of the voice to put a piercing sound on it, not necessarily loud, but that's what you hear when you hear a singer making that sound. It is emotional. When Dewey Balfa sings Cajun music, you don't have to understand Cajun French. You don't have to understand what he's saying. Your heart will weep with his heart when he sings Papa's Waltz, his grandpa's waltz, or when he sings songs about his two brothers who were played music with him all those years, who were simultaneously killed in an automobile accident. It's that sound of the voice that's putting that across, and that's what folk singing is about. Bob Dylan, you know, there's a focusing in of that voice, and that is a different aesthetic. That is what sounds good. That is pretty, if you want to use the word pretty. But so you'll hear more of that. You'll hear it a lot in my voice. You hear it in Kay's voice. You hear it in voices that have not been too altered by radio. If you listen to a lot of radio, you start to lose it because it's going to go, you're back to singing in the shower singing again. You know, because that's what we've all been taught somehow or other, to be ashamed of that voice, of that folk music voice. And even here in the heart of West Virginia, my music teacher was born and raised here, was teaching education majors how to teach little children to sing. And he said, we must teach them not to sing in their playground voice. Oh, yeah. I want my kids to sing in their playground voice, you know. And I want all of you this week to sing in your playground voice, you know. It doesn't mean hurting your throat. Oh, don't hurt your throat. And that's going to be so easy to do here, you know. But you don't have to push or do anything to your vocal cords that's going to hurt. Drink a lot of water. Take a nap, you know. I will be taking naps. If I disappear and you don't see me, I'm napping. Because there's nothing worse for your singing than being tired. If you sing outdoors in these mountains at night when the fog is coming up, at least wrap up your throat. Put either a scarf or a turtleneck or something, you know, don't put something around your throat. But drink a lot of water. Fisherman's Friend is a little lozenge that you can buy down at the drugstore too. They are excellent. Very strong eucalyptus in there, but they are really good for your throat. Do them in succession, three or four at a time, not just one. Try to get your rest and drink water every meal. Drink a glass of water, even with whatever else you drink. And if you can make the switch, instead of drinking milk, drink lemonade, because lemons are much better for your throat when you're singing than either hot or cold. But lemons are better than dairy products. That includes ice cream. Okay, those are some things by way of saving your voice that I wanted to remind you about. And also that when your voice is starting to get tired, remember that talking as well as singing exhausts your voice. And hard coughing. So, you know, in hard coughing, hard clearing your throat. You know, go easy on that kind of thing if you possibly can. But now everybody stop and clear their throat. And just talking about it, everyone has to clear their throat. All right. Want to sing one with them first? Let's sing one with them first. I'm going to do one that you don't need the words for. I do, because I'm going to lead you. I'll try to Now, much of the singing, see, that Daddy and I do is unaccompanied, because that's the church that we grew up in sang unaccompanied. So don't take my only words. Here. You can hold it.
You're going to stand there?
I know it.
Oh, he knows it.
But is he going to stand? You're going to stand or sit?
He'll probably
sit. I'll stand.
Whatever. You never know. All right. When I sing a line, sing it exactly like I sang it right after me. Okay, I'll sing it, and then Daddy will sing with you. So if there's any question, just, sing with Daddy, okay?
What are you going to do, line of notes?
Uh-huh. Okay. And that way we'll get through the whole song. Normally this is done with a bass lead, but you want to do bass lead on the chorus? I'll try to sing as high as I can.
Well, don't matter.
Okay. Gosh, he's leaving me all these choices. I'm not used to it.
I'm going to sing with them. They're not going to sing to me.
Okay. All right. You're going to sing with them. All right. Then we won't have bass lead. I'll lead it. Okay. Each day I'll do.
Each day I'll do.
A golden deed.
A golden deed.
By helping those.
By helping those.
Who are in need.
Who are in need.
My life on earth.
My life on earth.
Is but a span.
Is but a span.
And so I'll do.
And so I'll do.
The best I can. Life's evening sun.
Life's evening sun.
Is sinking low.
Is sinking low.
A few more days. And I must go.
And I must go.
To meet the deeds.
To meet the deeds.
That I have done.
That I have done.
Where there will be.
Where there will be.
No setting sun.
No setting sun.
Okay. Try listening while I'm singing to some of the style things that I'm doing. Some just to make you a little aware of some of them, I'm sliding instead of hitting pear-shaped notes. Sliding is part of folk singing. Slide from one note to the other. Also, there are what I can only call dwells. There are certain notes that are held out of time. You know, and you just, when you hear a good sound coming from the top of your mouth, sometimes those sounds are good just focused, and you just hold them for a little longer, and then you catch it up on the next word. Okay? So listen for some of those things. And we're moving this along at a pretty good clip, because it's not choral singing. Okay? It's trying to get you into the mode of singing as well as just doing it. To be a child,
to be a child
of God each day.
Of God each day.
My light must shine.
My light must shine
along the way.
Along the way.
I'll sing his praise.
I'll sing his praise.
While the ages roll.
While the ages roll.
And strive to help.
And strive to help
some troubled soul.
Troubled soul.
Life's evening sun.
Life's evening sun.
Is sinking low.
It's
a few more days,
a few more days,
and I must go,
and I must go,
to meet the deeds,
to meet the deeds,
that I have done,
that I have done,
where there will be,
where there will be,
no setting sun,
no setting sun,
the only light,
the only light,
that will endure,
that will endure.
Is one that's kind,
is one that's kind,
and good and pure,
and good and pure,
and so for God,
and so for God,
I'll take my stand,
I'll take my stand,
and try to do,
and try to do
the best I can,
the best I can.
Life's evening sun,
life's evening sun,
is sinking low,
is sinking low.
A few more days,
a few more days.
And I must go
to meet the deeds, to meet the deeds
that I have done,
that I have done,
where there will be,
where there will be
no setting sun,
no setting sun.
All right, thank you. Yeah, I think by the end of the week, you're going to be surprised how different you will sound. If you'll go into this week with a just with the faith of a child. Just say, I don't know what this is. I don't know what it's about, you know, but I'm just going to go right on, you know. And you'll take home with you things that you did not expect to learn. You probably may not learn a technique, but you may learn something about a people and their music that you didn't know before, in a way that you cannot ever learn from watching a video about it or, you know, reading a book about it. So just stay real open. Stay real open to things. And, you know, my only advice for people who are here for the first time is don't get hung up on details. You know, if somebody is, you know, the meeting place gets a little bit mixed up, or the meeting time is 5 minutes off, or, you know, the door was left closed when it was supposed to be open. Those things just happen when you have so many people here, you know. So, you know, don't let those things get you too rattled. And you'd be surprised. Some really great things can happen when the door was locked that was supposed to be open. I met Nimrod Workman, who is 95 this year, about 6'4" if he'd stand up. And he's just fooling around a lot. And he weighs about 120. And he's just skin wrapped around a voice. If you could hear this man sing, he can rattle the trees on these hills. And the chapel door was locked. And he was sitting out here on this bench. The fog had not lifted yet in the mornings, and I heard this voice just coming through. You know, I was walking from over there, and it was magnificent. And then Molly, his wife, who's about 5 feet tall, about this big, and Molly is singing, since she started singing the songs of her church, the Holiness Church of God, and she's got real wonderful voice. And I'm gonna die on the battlefield, gonna die in the Lord. I'm gonna die on the battlefield with glory in my soul. And she's singing this, and that voice is just going out over these hills. It's just a wonderful thing. And we were just mesmerized, and instructors were coming out of the dorm up there, you know, getting dressed as they came down the hill, you know, to hear this singing that just happened because the door was locked. So things like that can happen at Augusta. So I want Daddy to talk to you some about his growing up, his parents, and his particularly how the music worked into his life. For those of you who have heard it before, maybe you'll hear a new little story or detail that you hadn't heard before. Or if you're like me, I've been hearing it many years and I like to hear it again. Reminds me of my roots and the roots of the music. This is Ben Hawker.
You were waiting for me to do that.
Yeah. Well, he got you.
And back when Jenny was born, back in 19. Anyway, I thought she would never start talking. Well, at 2 weeks, I was shaking, say daddy. And I said, this child not going to talk. And but once she started talking, I haven't been able to stop her. So she's been talking ever since. I was born and raised on a tobacco farm near Danville at the foothills of the White Oak Mountains, and born in a large family, 10 children, 6 boys and 4 girls. And we was always poor, but we didn't know it because everybody else was poor. And we had, of course, I was my father's members are back about 1920. We had no electricity, no telephone, no television, no car. And we had moved a lot. And the houses that we moved in, we would describe them as Well, how many rooms? Well, we got 5 rooms and a path. And 10 rooms and a path. We always had a path. So being from a poor family with nothing to do but work, and it seemed we never did catch up with work on a tobacco farm. We year round. There was no because we only sold the tobacco once a year, and that was when we had our only income. But we worked the year round to raise it and get ready for the next crop. For we harvest one crop, we'd be getting ready for the next crop. And like I said, we had 10 children at one time. It was all 10 of us, plus a couple of brother-in-laws, were living at home at one time. And we raised most of our food in the gardens, and my mother was very conservative, and she preserved a lot of stuff, everything that you can imagine, she would preserve it. And I know I used to love to get in that closet where she kept all this preserves and stuff, and especially peaches. I love peaches, and I once ate a whole half gallon at one sitting. So I was much younger then. I couldn't hardly eat a quart now. Anyway, but we, like I say, we moved a lot, and of course, those of you that were here before, that's been here, have heard me tell this before. We was always looking for a better place, and we sharecropped and rented, and as we moved, we put all our earthly belongings, my father and mother and father's earthly belongings, on 2 wagons. Now the wagons had a double team. For some of you that on the farm knows what that is. I guess Carl, you know, don't you? had a tongue with a double team, either a horse and a mule, or 2 horses, or 2 mules, or whatever. And we put everything on those 2 wagons and moved to the next place we were going to try for the next year, or 2 years, or 3 years. Sometimes we move every year, and we always load the the cook stove last and unload it first. So my mother would cook last before we left the place, and then she would get set up to cook soon when they got to the other place. Sometimes it's 5 or 6 miles, 10 miles, sometimes it's 20 miles. And I remember 1932 or 1931, I was about 14 or 15 years old. And we moved onto a farm that a millionaire owned. And my daddy said he was going to tie onto some apron strings. He wanted to be strong apron strings that would hold. So we lived there 2 years and then moved to another place, and lived there 1 year, and then moved to another place in 1934, and moved there 1 year. Then we moved and stayed at the next place 4 years. And that's why I got married there in 1938. So that was the beginning of the end. And so.
I'm going to tell Mother you said that.
What?
I'm going to tell Mother you said that.
She already knows it. I guess. I hope. So we. During all these hard times, I recall as a child, my parents were members of the old Primitive Baptist Church. They're called Primitive Baptist, Hard Shields, or the Old Baptist, and they got a lot of different names. And they say, I haven't seen it documented, but they say that the church can be traced back to John and James, Peter and James. And they come down from New England when the Pilgrims landed here, and they come down through the Shenandoah Valley, and most of them settled in Georgia and South Carolina, North Carolina, and Louisiana and Texas. Goes quite a few from West Virginia and Virginia. And they, every time that somebody wanted to change something or add missionaries or have Sunday school or whatever, they split off and went into another type of Baptist. But the old Primitive Baptists never changed anything. Never changed. They just like they were then. They did today, just like they were then. Some of the things I don't agree with. One of the things is the women have no voice at all in the business of the church. They vote through their husbands, and of course that's why so many of them are henpecked, I guess. So, but they are very strict in their rules, and they don't approve of divorce. And they take a person's name off the roll if they remarry. Anyway, but I didn't know all that as a child, and I used to go to church with my mother and father. And my father, he was a great hummer. He hummed all the time, and I found myself doing that a lot too. And all the way back and forth to church, he would hum these old Primitive Baptist songs. And he was real dedicated. He was a deacon for 40-some years. But he was pretty rough before he got to going to church. He used to be kind of on the wild side. So the old song that they sang there has been a treasure to me through the years. And it's very rarely I ever go to a church to sing that type of singing. It's all a cappella. They don't believe any kind of music in the church, and they sang real slow, real deliberate, and they put a lot of emphasis on each word, and they sometimes they get a breath after every word, sometimes get a breath in the middle of the word. So you'll notice that if I'm gonna do a little sample here, and the best I can. And this is my father's little book. It's a treasure to me, and I had it kind of reworked over the back. And it doesn't have any music in it at all, just words, just verses. And some of the pages are stained more than others. Working in the tobacco, my father would get tobacco stain on his fingers, and it's hard to get off. It'd take months to get to wear it off. You couldn't wash it off, and it would stain the book while he would hold the book and with one hand and sing. So the song that he liked best is it's got the most stains on the pages throughout. So I recall it was very loosely structured, the service was, and they would be milling around outside a little small church, and maybe 40, 50 people would be the maximum. And then the leaders and the one that could sing would start singing inside the church, and you could hear them, you know. Start off real slow, and he'd get louder and louder, and then everybody would start moving on in. The other people would move on in the church. And they had and they would get real emotional, and they didn't mind, they didn't care, you know, didn't try to hide anything. The tears would flow, and they would had, especially at the time that the ending of the service, it was called the breaking up, and they would go around and shake hands while they were singing, and that was a very emotional time. But they got a great satisfaction out of that, a great satisfaction. It was it gave them the stamina to withstand all the hard times, and they seemed to gain an inner strength from it. My daddy did, and my mother too, of course. After each service, after each for the next week, you could see he would hum more and more and more. You know, he seemed to be more happy. And although they were tough times then, and so I'm going to try to pick out a song here and see. What number was that?
Which one?
530.
Yeah.
These songs have got numbers. They don't have a
That's all that we have passed down to the generation. Are these books with
poetry. They call that with just the poetry in there. The tunes are passed on from Daddy and his sisters and everything, sing to me and my sister. And that's how we get the tunes. And we were both in different congregations. Sometimes they use a different tune. This one, you see the tune CM? That means common meter. That means in the rhythm of the poetry, you'll have in the first line 8 beats, in the second line 6, and it goes 8-6-8-6. Amazing Grace is a common meter song. Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Okay, that's 8-6-8-6. So is Ghost Riders in the Sky is 8-6-8-6. So that means that you can sing of the Amazing Grace with the tune of Ghost Riders in the Sky. And so any of the common meter songs, but there will be throughout different congregations and associations of congregations, there will be many different common meter tunes. So it's very interesting to those of us particularly interested in the music to hear more common meter tunes, you know, from another place, or a long meter, or a short meter, and then they have particular meter, which always is very interesting to me. P period, M period is particular meter. But anyway, this one is done the only notation we have is 8-7. So I don't know if that means, let's see, brethren, we have to. Okay, it runs 8-7, 8-7, 8-7 all the way through. So, but anyway, you may recognize this, those of you who are in the Methodist Church and Presbyterian Church, this hymn is in those churches. It's just done so much more rapidly and more, you know, in a definite beat pattern, you know, divided up in nice, neat bars and measures and things like that, that, you know, it may be, you'll recognize it a little bit. But this is the way it's done in the Primitive Baptist Church. The word primitive, not meaning backward, it comes from the root word prime, since that was where the Baptist churches started breaking off. This Primitive Baptist Church is much more Calvinistic in its approach to these things.
Of course, my parents and most of the Primitive Baptists I know, they didn't know anything about music. They, you know, they didn't know what a bar or a staff. They thought a staff was something that you beat a horse with, and a bar was something that you pry the wagon loose from and get stuck. So.
If you want entertainment for an evening, get Daddy to start telling you stories. We can't let him tell them in the chapel. But can I set this over here so I can stand a little bit closer to what he's doing?
Sure. You go sing it with me.
Yeah, let me pitch it a little bit, or you'll have me screaming out too soon. I'll get it. I'll do it as high as I can, though. Brethren, we have met to worship and adore the Lord our God. Will you pray with all your power while we try to preach the word? All is vain unless the Spirit of the Holy One come down. Let us pray that holy manna may be scattered all around. I'll try to do it a little higher. Look and see poor sinners round you trembling on the brink of woe. Death is coming
how they love me. Can you bear to let them go? Let us tell them of the Savior. Tell them that he may be found. Let us pray that holy manna may be scattered all around. Is there here a trembling jailer seeking grace and filled with fears? Is there here a weeping Mary pouring forth a flood of tears? Let us join our prayers to help them. Let our faith and love abound. Let us pray that holy manna may be scattered all around. Let us love our God supremely. Let us love each other too. Let us love and pray for sinners till our God thy soul renew. Then we'll love them still thee better. Take them to our kind embrace. Journey with them on to glory, thou to sing redeeming grace.
Okay. Now, we're going to sit for the rest of this. Can we sit for the rest of this?
Right.
So he can keep these things straight.
Well, that's all right.
That's
all
right. Now, if you've heard that song done in the Methodist Church, I'll see if I can remember how they do it. Brethren, we have met to worship and adore the Lord our God. Will you pray with all your power while we try to preach the word? I went to Methodist Church for years and years, and that was the way we sang it. Now, yeah, and the Baptist Church sing it maybe a little bit slower. They may do a little slower than that.
Not at the one I go to.
But anyway, just, you know, to my way of hearing and of feeling, I guess, as opposed to thinking, that kind of singing is very intense. And it does. The fact that it's done unaccompanied, the fact that it's done in unison rather than harmony, the fact that it's done at a slow-moving pace with words being having some time for you to take in a phrase or a particularly important word, to me, that just gives a lot of feeling to that song. It really does. And I've had, you know, total atheists to say, got to get away from here.
Of course, they sang in the same church that my parents went to. They do sing harmony in there now. But these younger people come along, join the church, and they are really harmony. They are really good singers. Of course, they don't know music except just by ear, like I do, and they do sing harmony in there now. Some beautiful singing too. When I go there occasionally. Because I live now on the eastern shore of Virginia, across the Chesapeake Bay, which is about 40 miles north of Norfolk. You go across the Bridge Tunnel, a Bridge Tunnel complex. So it's
most of you know where Chincoteague is, where the Chincoteague. Well, lives over there on that eastern shore near Chincoteague. That's
it's where two counties in Virginia over there. 75% of all the vegetables grown in the state is grown on those two in those two counties. Potatoes, tomatoes, string beans, peppers.
Just very, very, very flat land. Yeah. Very flat, very fertile area over there.
They grow tomatoes by the ton and okay. Potatoes by the ton.
Yeah. Do you have a question? It's okay.
Could you clarify someplace in between there, is the holiness singing someplace in between that Methodist and the Primitive Baptist?
Yeah, okay. Primitive Baptist singing, if you can think of it on a scale, like Primitive, there are several different scales we can look at it. Primitive Baptist singing would be, as far as John McCutcheon has called it, the most authentic folk singing we have in this country. It's way at this end. Okay, and you would have Southern Baptist, Free Will Baptist, coming on up in structure here, as we're saying, structure and instrumentation. Then you'd have
Missionary
the Methodist,
Baptist.
Yeah. Then you'd have the Methodist, and then you'd have the Episcopalians, and you know, regular choral music done with. You know, huge pipe organs and things like that at the other end of the scale. All of it being, you know, extremely beautiful singing. You know, it's just that it's a different sound. And both in, you know, the speed and the way the singing is done, the way the service is done. When Daddy was talking about the service starting that way, that's my memory as a young child of the service starting. It's just, you know, we'd be standing outside greeting each other, you know, everybody hugging and shaking hands and everything. And although I will have to say, for those of you who are not familiar with any religions of the South, and you think that all religions in the South from Ted Turner Network, that we're all snake handlers here. You know, I tell you, if there's one little church that has 14 members, he would find that one little church somewhere. That people in the community didn't even know it was there. You know, say, oh my gosh, I didn't know till I saw on TV that those were live snakes. They didn't have any idea who lived right there. You know, but, there's so few of them, but he would find it, buddy, because it's sensational. And, you know, but it leaves people with the impression that this is what religion is like here. But particularly in the Primitive Baptist Church, it's a very dignified type of service. And when we talk about crying that may be done, it's in a silent. I never heard, they're in the Primitive Baptist Church, they don't do a lot of shouting and amen and moving, you know, that kind of thing. That's generally not. But, you know, it's just a quieter type thing. When they're crying, many of them do, because sometimes it'll be that touching and that moving. And during the week, you will no doubt see Daddy cry and you will see me cry. And sometimes we'll cry at our own singing. Sometimes we'll cry at each other's singing. Sometimes it's the words. Sometimes it's the sound of the sound of the voice that's touching. Sometimes it's the memory that it's evoking. And when you hear someone singing about the loss of a child, you don't have to have lost a child to be in touch with that. You know, if you've had loss of any kind that deeply could be, you know, a pet that you had by your side for 14 years, and that loss was very deep to you. It can be, you know, a parent that we've had that happen in here many times, a parent that recently died, and I didn't know that. But so anything that sometimes the singer can get bring those feelings out, and people will cry, and that's all right. No one, I'm not embarrassed by that or ashamed or anything. I grew up particularly with men crying. You know, I've seen it, and I'm not uncomfortable by it. I tend to be probably a little uncomfortable if the moment is so touching and someone cannot cry or must make a joke, must laugh. I realize that sometimes people do laugh because they are uncomfortable about someone else being touched, or themselves coming very close to being touched, and then they just laugh or make a joke, and that would probably make me uncomfortable. So if you feel like that the song or the story or whatever is something that is touching you, that's fine with me. Anyway. I would say, though, if you really want an entertaining evening, get this one somewhere to telling you stories. He's an excellent storyteller, second only to his singing. And he's also one of the best blues singers you'll ever run across. And you will hear sometimes in his Primitive Baptist singing, you'll hear blues turns being done. That is, I didn't know. I thought that was the way the Primitive Baptist singing was done till I heard his sister. I heard Aunt Delma sing it. Aunt Delma didn't do that on the end of the line like that. And I realized it was tell him, where did you get that? Oh, the blues influence in your singing.
I don't know.
You told me one time about a neighbor fellow.
Oh, yeah. But we lived, of course, a lot of... hired help on the farm with black people, and they used to sing and they really enjoy singing. And I grew up listening to them sing, and I sang with them a lot. And it somehow just attracted me, and I got into the blues thing, I guess, what she's referring to. But nothing else to do, like I say, except work on the farm. That's what I did for entertainment. We would go from neighbor to neighbor, or from my brothers, after they moved away from home and were married, we'd go there and sing till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and play and so forth. And of course, we'd sing during the daytime while we were working, all up and down the... Man, the hollers, you could hear the echo, especially in the morning. And I could hear these fellas, these black people singing, and I would sing back at them. Don't come here crying, holding out your hand. I'll get me a woman, and you can get you a man. And I'll be gone, but I won't worry. 'Cause I'm sitting on top of the world. So that's what would echo up and down the hollers.
So it makes you wonder about the definition of the word poor, doesn't it? Yeah. And, you know, the memories of my growing up, you know, are just as filled with singing as that, you know, because we've spent a lot of time after we moved over on the Eastern Shore going back to that place around Danville. Danville is right on the North Carolina border, about 15 miles from the border. And this was out in the foothills, not in the high mountains, the foothills of Virginia. And by the way, we all will go back with our geography lesson learned, right? That West Virginia is not Virginia. And when someone says they're from West Virginia, you do not ask how far from Roanoke are you. And each one that goes back will teach one as we go back. There's Virginia and there's West Virginia. Anyway, we spent a lot of time going from the Eastern Shore over on the ocean there over to back to visit our relatives. And you know, several times a year over. And we tried to spend one Christmas without going to Grandpa's house because we always spent Christmas there. Can't believe you can't hear me. Anyway, and we said, no, we want to spend one Christmas at home. It was the worst Christmas we ever had. We thought it would be really great. We get to decorate our own house, you know, and all of us kids and everything.
1954.
I didn't remember which year, but it was terrible. And we found out that, you know, all the grumbling that we had done about having to make that long trip and not being able to decorate the whole house and those things, you know, that kids want to do. It wasn't near as important as being around all those 51st cousins.
Did we leave the same day and go?